Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Way of Wisdom by Renee Jaeger and Michael Anderley, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1. Peace up to heaven, heaven down to earth, earth beneath heaven, strength in each, a cup very full, full of honey, mead in abundance, summer in winter. Part 1 of a poem by the Morrigan Bibe after defeating the Fomorians from the Ka Mog Tereed. The Second Battle of Mog Tereed. Why I hadn't decided to change clothes before driving all the way out into the northern English countryside from the city was beyond me. Even with the windows down, the heat was suffocating. Here I was, thighs sticking to my pencil skirt as I drove around another bend in the dusty road. The low stone walls rose around me, accompanied by grazing cattle and trees swaying in the gentle breeze. The breeze was doing very little to cool me down. I had thought that Haiti, a tropical island I hadn't returned to in over 10 years, was where I would experience heat stroke. "Not England," I grumbled, as if the weather would hear me and answer in a favorable fashion. "You're exaggerating," I told myself. But it was hot. I wasn't going to experience heat stroke, but in England we were not used to heat waves. I leaned my head against the headrest after going around another bend and considered how much I had dealt with in the past few months. The heat was of little importance in comparison. I shifted in my seat, hoping to ease my discomfort as my thighs slid along the heated leather of the car. I had hired a more expensive car this time around since I could afford it. I glanced at myself in the rearview mirror, remembering that I took more time on my makeup and hair these days. I grinned as the breeze floated into the car through open windows and inhaled a deep breath, savoring the clean air of the countryside. My life was in the city, and I loved it there, but damn did it feel good to be outside it just now. It turned out that overthrowing the person in charge of funding necessary businesses like the hospitals and becoming his replacement meant doing a lot of work in an urban environment. I shifted my shoulders as if I could slide the burden of my new job off of myself. I grinned again as I recalled my mother's reaction. She had gasped over the phone before accusing me of telling a very unamusing joke. After reassuring her my position was real and directing her to view the live-streamed interview with our area's wealthiest man, Reginald Hounson, she had been silent on the other end in shock. "Well, we're going to have to go shopping again," she had announced at last. I had obliged her in order to have some time with her in person. The result had been the black pencil skirt, blazer, and pumps I had decided wouldn't be too uncomfortable to wear on the train, and then in the car. I had been dead wrong. Good thing I could deal with my shitty decisions. It was better than dealing with goblin overlords and free druids whose magic was anchored to ancient trees. A sobering thought entered my mind as I considered the creatures I had been up against just weeks ago. "You've upset the supernatural hornet's nest. You're just starting," I reminded myself. In this area, I had yet to encounter anything strange and threatening other than my wolf and crow friends. I glanced at the trees lining the road and at the sky beyond them. No carrion birds. Not yet, at least. Once I reached the end of the road and my destination came into sight, I allowed the anticipation of being able to change my clothes to seep in. I smiled as a hill sloping upward into a thick forest came into view. The trees were massive and close together, making it difficult to distinguish the small cottage pressed up against them. "Finally," I muttered as I parked at the bottom of the hill and turned the engine off. I was hoping the old woman I called Gran had not come all the way down to greet me, but I was not surprised to find she had. From the driver's seat, I could see she looked more ancient than she had the last time I'd seen her just a week ago. She had shrunk, and her limbs looked easy to snap. Her complexion had paled. Gone was her sun-kissed appearance, though her eyes still sparkled. Gran's smile was radiant as I stepped out of my car, twirling the fob on its ring around my finger. I returned her smile, feeling lighter. I was only here for a couple of days, no more, no less, I told myself. Although work was stressful and left me little time to consider my goddess destiny, I needed a break to learn more. Unfortunately for me, Gran seemed to be running out of things to teach me, although I kept finding more questions to ask. As I closed my car door, Gran's voice broke through my thoughts.
"Angelica, my dear, you look prepared to take on all of England."
Her words were threaded with amusement, but she meant what she said. I chuckled and glanced down at my black heels as they began to sink into the soft ground. The car behind me glistened in the sun. It was a sleek, flashy model. It had looked fun to drive, and it had been quite some time since I had been behind the wheel of a fast car. I remembered the old car I had driven before I got my new job. It had taken me where I needed to go, but the incessant clattering of its infernal parts told me it would be better to just buy a new one. Fortunately for me, I had been hired by one of the wealthiest men in England.
"What's it like working for a billionaire?"
my mom had asked me. I had shrugged. "I'm not required to get into his bed, so I'm not complaining." I remembered that comment as I approached Gran. The old woman, who was really my great-great-aunt and not my grandmother, pulled me into her arms. After embracing me, her eyes traveled over me, taking in every inch of the designer clothing my mother had insisted I purchase. Her gaze made me feel self-conscious.
"It's just clothes, Gran."
Her brow rose.
"And the car?"
"Not mine."
"But you hired it?"
Gran grinned.
"The way of kings looks good on you, Ange."
I smiled back, relief flowing through me. I had hoped more than anything that, with my new position, people like Gran and my friend Douglas wouldn't see me as being in it for the money. Sure, the pay raise had been significant and wonderful, but it didn't matter if I wasn't going to be able to make remarkable changes in our city.
"Don't think about the city right now," I told myself. "You're here in the countryside. You're with Gran. Just be."
I slung an arm around her shoulders. "I would rather look country than boardroom." Gran chuckled.
"Let's get you inside and settled then."
After changing into cargo shorts and a tank top to the music of goats bleating just outside my bedroom window, I found my way to Gran's garden. She was attending to her flower bed. I stood over her with my hands on my hips. The woman bending over below me was sweating in the late afternoon sun.
"It's been a month, Gran. What's next?"
31 days ago, I had taken Samuel McAlpine and his goblin cronies down. To my surprise, billionaire Reginald Townsend had replaced the CEO with a much less experienced individual. This very individual now stood in her Gran's garden, wondering how the hell she was supposed to run the funding for all the major hospitals in her city, and be the ancient Irish goddess of war at the same time. I blew a loose strand of dark hair out of my face and bent down. Gran glanced at me, her expression solemn and devoid of the amusement and cheer she had displayed upon my arrival.
"A month," she echoed.
I nodded. It had been a good month, lacking supernatural beings to deal with. But McAlpine's last comment to me about upsetting the supernatural hornet's nest still irritated the back of my brain. Gran removed her garden gloves.
"I wanted to give you time to settle into your new job before we took any more steps."
"I appreciate that, but the faster I learn what I'm supposed to be doing, the better." Gran nodded and grinned.
"You forget one thing. I held your position during 2 world wars. I know what you're going through, Ange. You have to be patient."
I shut my mouth. Gran was right, but I wasn't the most patient person. "Just ask Simon," I wanted to say with a chuckle. Simon, my previous boss and colleague at the hospital, still worked with me, but in a different way. We were both eager to see an end to the current worldwide pandemic, but his cistern of patience was much deeper than mine. Gran laid a warm, comforting hand on my shoulder. I was grateful, knowing the way of kings was not being used on me. I felt safe and reassured.
"I have told you about the Morrigan's power being divided among 3 people,
Gran started. I nodded.
"And now the power you held is in me."
Gran folded her hands together.
"The next step is to find and earn the blessing of the second Morrigan, my sister."
My brow rose. I had never heard of Gran having a sister. But then I remembered how many things my mother had kept from me. The second Morrigan could not be my mother's grandmother, for the Morrigan could not have children. That part of the magical contract still made my stomach clench. Was she really your sister? Gran shook her head, and a slow, somewhat sad smile spread her lips apart.
Not by blood, but by promise. I called her Miss Bane, although she was very dear to me.
Gran had lived a life alone as the Morrigan, but perhaps there was more to the story that I wasn't aware of. If Gran and this second Morrigan had been close, she would be easy to find. After some work in the garden and a hearty dinner, Gran would pass her knowledge on to me, wouldn't she? I was dead wrong. Gran seemed to understand the expectations that were being played out in my mind.
She disappeared many years ago. Even before I came to live here after the war, I lost contact with her.
I swallowed hard. Great. The second Morrigan had disappeared, and so had the Book of the Morrigan, hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. Being the goddess of war was not going to be simple. Gran continued, her gaze distant.
She was an elusive one, and difficult to find even when we did work together. Even when you do find her, I cannot promise she will give you her knowledge.
My stomach twisted. Would the woman be willing to talk to me at least? Gran's brows drew together.
The way of seers is not like the way of kings. The way of kings can be given over in a simple blessing, as I have done for you. But the way of seers has to be earned. Knowledge is the greatest source of power. Although your influence with the way of kings has aided you immensely, it is the way of seers that will direct your path.
Seers. Was I going to have to look into crystal balls and tarot cards?
Gran smiled. The way of seers is about wisdom, understanding, and foresight. It requires understanding the patterns of history and how they will be repeated. It isn't as simple as a vision telling you exactly what will happen.
This reminded me of the vision I'd had the first time I'd come here as an adult. The council flats that had been overtaken by a low order of goblins called Fuka had been freed because of it.
Gran continued. The Morrigan is the goddess of war. All three aspects of her power work together. The Way of Kings rallies people for battles. The Way of Seers directs them in how to wage those wars. And the Way of Conquerors gives them the strength and resolve to do so.
The whole thing sounded like a load of cow shit. But when I remembered Gran had been involved in both world wars, I reined in my thoughts.
Gran lifted her head and straightened her shoulders. The Way of Kings puts the sword in your hand. The Way of Seers directs it where to go. And the Way of Conquerors drives the sword home.
She turned to meet my gaze and laid a warm, comforting hand on my arm once again.
Finding the Way of Seers will take time, but you will come across it in due time.
Gran's final words on the matter did not do much to reassure me. Time, I decided, was not my favorite resource. It was seldom on my side. I groaned inwardly. Looked like we had a long way to go.
I banished my thoughts and looked at the horizon, where the sun cast blood-orange rays against the darkening blue.
A rustle from the other end of the garden where the gate stood open captured my attention, and I smiled. The enormous black wolf, who had stepped in on silent paws and had only made noise when he neared us, would have scared the shit out of me weeks ago. After battling by his side, watching him die, and then watching Gran bring him back to life with the last of her power, he now appeared to me as an old friend. Rustles overhead directed my attention to the boughs of the pear tree, where the several crows had just landed. Well, hello, my friends, I thought.
Gran peered at me. Our company has shown up, I see.
Over the past several weeks, I had been looking at art of the Morrigan online, which had been created by people who believed the goddess to be a mythological creature and nothing else. Crows and the wolf were scattered among the art, making her seem more legend than real. Sometimes, I still gaped at the sight of the wolf. I approached him, and after he sniffed and licked at my hand, I sank my fingers into his deep, soft black fur. "What's your name?" I asked. Gran stood, watching us both. She shrugged.
"I never learned his name."
I tilted my head, examining the wolf's perked ears and swishing tail. "I'll have to find out sometime." Gran reached the other side of the wolf, and they greeted one another like old friends. Then she sighed.
"Miss Bane, my sister, is the only person who can help you now, I'm afraid. There is nothing else I can do, and no more knowledge I can impart."
Her words made my stomach knot, but I gave her a reassuring smile. "You have done so much for me up to this point, Gran." She returned my smile and patted my arm.
"You have taken on the mantle and relieved me of my power."
She released a low laugh.
"My gratitude cannot be expressed in words."
I watched Gran hobble through the back door of her cottage. Would I too reach a point in my life where this power felt heavy? Would I be able to find someone else to take it on? I shook my head, deciding now was not the time to consider the future. I glanced at the wolf. "Looks like it's just you and me and a whole damn murder of crows." I followed Gran into the cottage, and after spotting her in its dim interior, I confessed, "It's going to be hard to find the time to search for the second Morrigan."
"And even harder to find her," Gran added. "People make their own choices, but fate is still casting the dice."
My heart sank to my toes, and I frowned. I had never been the kind of person to believe the universe was in control of my future. Fate didn't matter to me. My choices did. I had to listen to Gran, though, because even with the choices she had made in her own life, the goddess Destiny hadn't left her until I came along. I sat down at the tiny kitchen table and accepted the cup of coffee she made for me. Gran gave me one last reassuring smile.
"They say we were a goddess of fate as well as war. The truth is, we can see a little farther around the bend. You'll learn that soon enough if you haven't yet."
Chapter 2
Spear upon a shield, shield upon a fist, blade bristling fort, consumption of solid earth, rites of grandchildren, forest on a point, horns from a cow, encircling fence, mast upon trees, weary bow, weary from growth, wealth for a boy, boy on a neck. Part 2 of a poem by the Morrigan Bybe after defeating the Fomorians from the Ka Ma Tirid, the Second Battle of Mog Tirid. "It's been a whole damn month," I muttered. A sigh came over the line. I guessed that my friend Douglas Velez was dragging a hand down his face as he listened to me rant.
"I know Morgan,"
he responded, using my last name. His tone expressed controlled patience. I, on the other hand, was losing both patience and control. It had been a whole month since I had visited Gran, and she had told me about the second Morrigan. As soon as I'd returned home, I had asked Douglas to start looking for Miss Bane.
"I don't know what else to do,"
he admitted to me. Douglas was not one to give up on investigations. The proof was in the pile of journals on my flat's dining table, which I used more for research and work than I did for eating. Douglas had not been able to find any addresses, places of employment, or even social media attached to anyone named Ms. Bane.
"There is one, but it isn't even her name."
I tucked my phone under my ear as I slipped on my shoes and waited for Douglas to continue. I heard the click of computer keys.
"There's a Ms. Caroline Baines who used to work at a tea shop near Liverpool, but the I is missing in her name. Could be a mistake."
"Any photographs?" I asked.
"Yes, one,"
Douglas replied.
"But what use would it be? Your Gran didn't describe her, did she?"
I sighed, remembering what Gran had said about needing to earn the way of seers, and the wisdom that came with it. Apparently, that meant a several-month-long investigation and withholding information from me. I adored the woman, but sometimes her methods felt crazy to me. Look into it if you can, Velez. It's all we've got.
Sure thing, Morgan. There's one other thing I wanted to talk to you about.
I drew in a deep breath. I already knew what he wanted. In my new job, I was spinning plates. I was the main act in every ring of a three-ring circus. Morgan's Murder, which was the online group I had started to make changes to our community, was what had gotten me into my new position. But it was difficult to keep it up, even with Douglas's help. At last, he spoke the words I had been expecting.
Morgan's Murder is declining in engagement. Likes, comments, discussion, and even views are down.
I pinched my nose and blew out a long breath. Douglas was a tremendous assistant when it came to helping me run the group. He was active in the discussions and in answering comments, messages, and emails, but it wasn't enough.
Without your face, Morgan, it doesn't feel like Morgan's Murder. Perception is reality. Without people seeing you from time to time, Morgan's Murder isn't perceived as being run by their beloved Crow Lady.
I gave a low chuckle. I still didn't like being called Crow Lady, but it was better than calling myself the Morrigan online. Even though Douglas, my mother, and Gran knew, I didn't want anyone else to. Even my longtime friend and colleague, Simon Lorne, had been left in the dark. I agree with you, I told Douglas. I'll try to do a live stream this weekend.
Sounds good, Morgan. I'll look into Miss Bane some more. No promises, though.
No promises, I repeated. Thanks for everything anyway. I hung up and stood in my kitchen for a long moment to collect my thoughts. My surroundings were quite different now that I had a new place to live. My tattered old sofa had been replaced with a higher-end design. I liked it a lot, but it looked too nice to sit on. The windows overlooked sprawling gardens with bubbling fountains, as well as a pool area connected to a fitness center. I hadn't had time to enjoy any of them since moving in. I glanced at the windowsill, where I had yet to see a crow, and something in me deflated. I kind of missed the damned thing. I threw some files into a briefcase, grabbed my coffee, and headed out of my flat. Just one meeting today, I reminded myself, as if it would make my workload feel lighter. It didn't. This meeting was to discuss a lack of progress. Except it isn't my fault, I muttered as I stepped into my car. I shut the door and started my car. No one had ever explained that running big money companies was so time-consuming. I couldn't help but feel there were more important things for me to be addressing. When I remembered that my position helped the hospital I used to work for, my motivation returned. Sometimes I missed my old job. Being an EMT had been time-consuming as well as emotionally draining, but at least in that job I had been able to focus on one thing at a time. It's all just taking a long time, I said aloud, as if there were someone present to tell me it was all going to work out. In my effort to increase efficiency and care resolution for the overrun hospitals and other companies suffering from the worldwide pandemic, I had taken on some innovative work. The thing was, said innovative work was taking too damn long. The company I'd been working with for the past few months had more than fallen behind. It was time to meet with them and see what the holdup was. I drank the rest of my coffee as I drove to work and tried not to think about the Morrigan or Morgan's murder. At least the Way of Kings would let me influence the meeting to go faster. I wasn't in the mood to dance around and take forever to get to the point. As I parked, my phone dinged, indicating a notification. I glanced at it. Seeing the name Simon made me smile, then groan.
Do you have time to get together this week?
It wasn't the message itself that made everything inside me rise in frustration. I had been trying to have a simple meal with my friend and former boss for weeks. He had been kind enough not to point out that I had cancelled on him the past 4 times. Damn, why does he even bother with me? I thought, releasing a bitter laugh. His kindness made my heart ache a little. No one had ever been kind enough to keep trying for so long. In haste, I typed my response. Friday evening, 7 o'clock. I'll be there. I promise. If I'm not, you have my permission to never speak to me again. The never speaking to me again part was impossible, given that we worked closely together to provide for the overrun hospital. Cancelling on him was for the good of the people, I thought, as I climbed out of my car and made my way to the office building's entrance. Then, remembering what we had said to one another in Haiti, I concluded that getting together for rest and conversation was exactly what we both needed. If we didn't take care of ourselves, we wouldn't be of any use to anyone. With that thought, I went into my meeting. The head of Meath Medical Supply was a weasel of a man. Mr. Gorgson was tall, with a thin frame and tiny eyes framed by circular glasses. His stringy hair was combed back. His pressed suit was a tad too short in the sleeves. I entered the meeting room to find him fumbling through files of reports, two of his employees flanking him. I strode in, and they closed the files with unhidden haste. The CEO flashed me a too wide smile.
"Good morning, Miss Morgan," Gorgson greeted me.
I nodded and sat down. "Are those the reports?" Gorgson's assistant nodded and slid the file over to me. Gorgson opened his mouth to object, but I had already flipped it open. I scanned the contents and frowned, then glanced at Gorgson to find his cheeks flushed and his hands fidgeting with his checkered tie. The Way of Kings had an effect on him, that much was apparent, but even without it, he was an easy person to intimidate. I restrained myself from lashing out and spoke to him in a controlled tone. "You're improving electrocardiogram equipment. Do you know what that means?" Of course they knew what it meant. It was their job, but their report showed me that asking them such questions might be just what they needed to feel humiliated enough to hurry the fuck up. Sometimes taking our time was required in the medical industry, but we had spent too much time on this project. Gorgson gulped and stuttered.
Yes, Miss Morgan. The equipment yields data to professionals that assists them in determining the condition of a patient's heart.
His voice trailed off, and I asked another question. Your improvements were supposed to increase the amount of helpful data. The data has increased, but it isn't helpful. It's jumbled and contradictory. Your reports here show that treatment quality has in fact gone down in many cases. I leaned back in my chair, crossed my arms, and fixed him with a stare. Gorgson's cheeks became redder, and he glanced at the two men with him. I continued. The result means you have stalled in how to proceed with the project. Your work was supposed to provide more concise and granular data, but the evidence points to the contrary.
Yes, Miss Morgan, I understand how you may feel,
Gorgson started, but I interrupted. This isn't about how I feel. We fund you so you can help save people. What I feel doesn't matter right now. What matters is the quality of care we can give to patients. I sighed. We need your help, but you're going to have to take this more seriously. Sure, there is room for error and correction, but the pace you're working at right now is too slow. I glanced at the reports once more, not waiting for a response from Meath Medical Supply's CEO. The data the new equipment can provide is impressive, but there are too many nodes to be attached to the patient. Do you see the problem with that? Gorgson did not answer, but one of his assistants did.
The nodes can't be quickly deployed, and the information is not prioritized in the readouts.
I gave the assistant an encouraging smile. I looked at the other one, but the man didn't seem like he wanted to be here. He held my gaze, but there was something distant and blank about it. Precisely. You know your own reports. That's good. I felt like I was talking to a child. Can the number of nodes be reduced so the deployment of the machine can be accelerated? Gorgson looked at each of his assistants as if they had the answers. They both shrugged.
I suppose we can try.
Trying doesn't get us anywhere, I wanted to say. I wanted to release a deep sigh and bury my face in my hands. Frustration welled within me, and I almost wished Samuel McAlpine, my former enemy who was now in prison, were here instead. Then, remembering all the chaos he had caused, I was glad for these dimwits. I stood and closed the folder. Prioritize the informational readout so the nurse or doctor or whoever is reading it can quickly go down a list and see important information. Picture it.
If I've got someone in distress, I don't want to be flipping through pages or panning to different screens to find what I'm looking for. I looked at each of them in turn.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?